Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Tim Bresolotti, let's talk about Charlie Baker. Who? Who he? Now, Charlie Baker got lucky. He ran against Martha Coakley. Don't you agree?
Yes. There was luck and some hard lessons learned from Charlie Baker's unsuccessful run for governor in 2010. Charlie Baker 2.0 was so different. And that sort of shift in his persona, shift in his campaign strategy, combined with running against Martha Coakley, I think those were the key elements in putting him over the top in 2014, no question.
So he was more conservative the first time, more liberal the second time. But the Coakley phenomena tells us so much about politics. She did badly when she ran for Senate. And as a result, there were people who were really angry at her that she was going to run a second time and say, well, she's not a winner. Were they justified in saying that?
It's interesting. She won the nomination despite being denied the party's endorsement at its statewide convention in June. And so she ran, but the party apparatus said, got to work, but not with the kind of enthusiasm that you might see from someone who's just connected with the organization, fired people up, gotten the local chairs in all the towns and cities in Massachusetts to rally their troops to get out there. So it was a tough dynamic to watch. And the fact that Martha Coakley only lost by a very slim margin, a little under 2 percentage points, says a lot about the Democratic committee and its ability to turn out the vote for a nominee whom the party apparatus was not all that excited about.
Yeah, they knew what was going to happen, I suspect.
Yeah, I agree. I think they knew as well. And I think it was more an appeal to party loyalty and pride that got them working than a true excitement or enthusiasm over Martha Coakley as a candidate.
Well, you know, there is this whole thing about name recognition, and that's an important thing. I know that Andrew Cuomo sort of shocked me when he stood up at a book signing thing and said perhaps he wasn't sure that the Cuomo name has actually been helpful to him. This is one of the great acts of nonsense that I have ever heard in my life. And the same thing true with Martha Coakley. I mean, she won because everybody knew her.
That's what it was. Yeah.
They didn't know the other guys. Who knew Steve Grossman?
That's right. And you could see that in the polls a year out from the election. She swamped any of her opponents for the Democratic nomination, and she had very healthy leads over Charlie Baker. And indeed, it was due in part and a significant part to name recognition. But that can only be the beginning for any statewide candidate in a place like Massachusetts, which has had a history of electing Republican governors. And essentially, she saw that advantage evaporate once Baker got out there. And again, Baker presented himself as more of a moderate and much more optimistic, more of a happy warrior. He had been so dour and angry in the 2010 cycle, and it was a completely different Baker that we saw in 2014.
So what's it going to be like? You have now a Republican governor, a blue state, a blue legislature. Where are the fights going to be?
A deeply blue legislature with veto-proof majorities. And so and Baker knows that, and he's actually done some smart things since the election. He's put a couple of Democrats in his cabinet. He's made overtures. He's gone to heavily Democratic areas, including parts of here in western Massachusetts, to...
You don't really think you're in western Massachusetts, do you? I live in Great Barrington. Now, that's western Massachusetts. Springfield,
what? If you were to think of it from the perspective of Boston, anything west of 495 is considered western Mass. But, and again, this is an area, it's only about a sixth of the electorate, but once you get away from the Connecticut border, these are towns that vote Democratic. And Baker's paid some attention out here with a couple of visits since the election. So he's aware of that. And I think in the area of human services and housing and so forth, he will try to meet the Democrats in the middle. where I think Democrats are going to be very wary of him is in his approach to the budget, and he's got to make some tough spending cuts right after taking office to balance the current budget, and in his approach to education. His education secretary is a strong advocate of charter schools, and that doesn't sit well with Democrats and teachers' unions in the state. And I think they're going to be Democrats are going to be keeping an eye on Baker in terms of his approach to business regulation in the state. He has nominated as his budget chief someone who's who has been a lobbyist for pro-business organization. And I think those are the areas, education, spending policy, business regulation, those are the areas where we're most likely to see clashes between the Democratic leadership in the legislature and the incoming Governor Baker.
Now, Bill Weld had, Democratic allies, because he knew how to sing with them and, horse around with them and the rest of that stuff. Is there a natural ally in the legislature for Charlie Baker?
It depends. In the House, Robert DeLeo has shown a willingness as Speaker to work with more moderate Democrats, and so it'll be interesting to see how he works with Governor Baker. In the Senate, the incoming Senate President, Stan Rosenberg, a Democrat from Amherst, is much more progressive, and I think if there are going to be disagreements and sharp policy differences, it's going to be between the incoming Senate President and the incoming governor. Mm. And again, those are the big three. The Senate President, the Speaker of the House, and the governor are really the power-sharing trio of the state, and they've got to cut deals in order to get anything done.
They're the what we call in New York the three men in the room.
Yes, that's who they are. You can't get a budget passed without all three of them agreeing, and so we'll see some interesting public debate and then private negotiation in the coming year.
Well, in terms of a major fight in Massachusetts, do you see one thing coming up that really gives you pause?
Well, there's no question that the transportation infrastructure in the state needs significant investment. And the legislature thought it had taken care of that with this graduated gasoline tax that would increase with the cost of living without additional votes by the legislature. That law was overturned in a referendum this fall, and so the guaranteed funding source for transportation in the state has dried up. And that's an important part of economic development policy as well. And so you're going to see some debates about that. I think you're going to see some debates about public education as well, and this shift, this emphasis on charter schools that will come out of the Baker administration, and some serious pushback from Democrats on that issue.
It's always wonderful to have Tim Bersalotti with us. When we come back the next time, Tim, I'm going to mention two words because she comes out of Massachusetts, and there is a growing groundswell to see her into major league presidential politics. I am talking, of course, about Elizabeth Warren. We'll come back and we'll talk about that the next time.
I look forward to it.